The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.
Brought to you by Standard Life. Retirement specialists getting you ready for your second life.
Now, to matters of the population, could Ireland cope with a population of 7.6 million? Well, we might just have to, because a report from the Department of Finance says under the right conditions, it could happen by 2065. It's only 40 years away. And if you think that back 40 years ago, the population of Ireland was just, Southern Ireland, just 3.54, it's an amazing growth over a very short period of time. How would this happen, and what would it change Ireland, both north and south of the border? I'm delighted Edgar Morgan-Roth, Professor of Economics at DCU, is with us now. Edgar, how are you today?
Good morning, very well.
Am I right in thinking these look like remarkable figures?
Yes, they're, if you look around Western Europe, you don't see countries having similar population growth, and many countries have very flat populations, you know, but very little growth. So, in the case of Ireland, it's the sustained nature that is quite remarkable. As you said, you know, we added 2 million to the population in the last 40 years, and if those projections come true, we would be adding another 2 million in the next 40 years. So that's quite remarkable. Indeed, Ireland, in terms of size of population, is catching up with some of our other EU countries, where we're no longer quite as small as we were.
Running side by side with that is the position in Northern Ireland, which is very different completely, isn't it?
That's right. Northern Ireland, you know, there is population growth, but it is at a much, much a slower pace. And it's quite startling, the contrast. And a lot of this, and particularly in the last decade or so, maybe two decades, a lot of our population growth has been really driven by immigration. And Northern Ireland is just not as attractive to immigrants as the Republic of Ireland is, and that is down to the economy. Again, the Department of Finance did something quite interesting. They looked very carefully at the components of migration, who comes to Ireland under what circumstances, and contrary to what some people are constantly pushing, is that the vast majority of the immigrants are actually people with work permits. They come here because an employer is looking for employees and can't find them locally, and then hires them from abroad. That's not the case in Northern Ireland. It just shows you that Northern Ireland is not such a strong economy.
I'm still a bit gobsmacked, to be honest, because how it's changed the dynamic on the island. In 1985, you would have been talking about a southern population 3.54 versus 1.5 million up north. Mm. Shoot forward to 2076, if these figures are correct, you'll have 7.6 living down south and only 2.1 up in Northern Ireland. Yeah. That's a totally different dynamic, isn't it?
Absolutely. And it's symptomatic of the structural problems in Northern Ireland. It's not simply the troubles, you know, as some people might say, oh, it's the troubles. The troubles are over a long time ago, and still we're not seeing Northern Ireland as a very dynamic economy. And again, we've done research on how you know, lagging regions that aren't doing so well can try and catch up, and it's a very difficult process. So simply taking the border away isn't going to make Northern Ireland suddenly become a dynamic, rich region. We've got parts of the Republic of Ireland that are also not seeing the same kind of population growth that, say, the Dublin area is seeing.
Right. How do you think it'll play out, though, if you have one part of the country kind of thriving, as it seems, and the other not thriving to the same degree at all? I mean, economically, does it have repercussions?
Absolutely, and we see that already in the Republic of Ireland, that the population pressures in the Dublin area are so much greater than, say, in the Midlands, and so housing costs in the Dublin area have been going up and up and up, and less so in say the Midlands, and the consequence is people commuting very long distances, and if you have much better transport links to, say, Northern Ireland, and less population pressure in terms of housing, then you could see people commuting much longer distances up to Northern Ireland, where they might be able to get cheaper housing. Of course, Brexit has made all of that a lot more difficult, but in a unification scenario, you would see Northern Ireland maybe becoming a bit of a kind of a commuter place, you know, just across the border, might be cheaper.
In terms of unification, obviously it's going to have ramifications there as well, but what are they likely to be?
Well, we would be adding a region to the Republic of Ireland, a bit that is economically a little bit like the Midlands, rather than adding a region that's a bit like Dublin. So it's going to be, for some time at least, generating a big fiscal drag. You have to subsidise the area, and Northern Ireland is in receipt of a very large subsidy already from Westminster. That would have to be found in the Irish budget, and it's not going to go away anyway soon, because changing the economy of a region takes a very long time.
And if you were to make the case that they should simply throw in their lot with us down south, that wouldn't be like waving a magic wand, would it?
No, there are no magic wands and no silver bullets when it comes to economics. The reality will be that you have a region that has structural issues, that has for a long time underperformed, and it's not suddenly just going to start performing the same as the Dublin region. If we had that, we wouldn't have the lower incomes in, say, the Midlands or along the border region. We would have already dealt with that, and that's within the Republic of Ireland already.
And also, how has it changed so dramatically? Because at one point, it felt like it was the north that very much had the edge in terms of infrastructure and everything else. How has it changed so comprehensively?
Yeah, there was a time when, you know, you drove across the border and the roads got better in north of the border. Now it's the opposite way. And I guess the remarkable economic turnaround that started in the Republic of Ireland back in the late 80s, early 90s, when it started, that became known as the Celtic Tiger. It's, you know, not maybe a great name, but it is a remarkable turnaround still. And we've managed to, despite hiccups like the financial crisis, we've managed to keep it up. Of course, a lot of it is driven by multinationals, foreign direct investment, and there are some dark clouds on the horizon for that. So let's see whether we can maintain this. I would argue we need to do a little bit more to develop our own industries to weather potential storms that are coming down the line. But we have, as a country, despite some of the commentary, performed incredibly well. And it's really, I mean, again, people from other countries come here to learn about how to do this because they think we're actually the poster child.
Right.
despite the commentary, you know, that you sometimes hear.
I saw other figures that went back to the 50s, and there was talk in the 50s when the population of Ireland was 3 million, that 400,000 people emigrated between 1950 and 61. I mean, that to take that number of people, young people as well, out of the country is heartbreaking and horrible. To turn around from that to the position that we're in now,
it's even more recent. I mean, I think you're similar vintage to myself. The 80s was a time when people emigrated. A lot of my friends left Ireland after school and didn't come back. So, you know, it's not that long ago when Ireland was not doing well. And now it's the place where people look to go to, you know, still, despite the housing crisis.
I can also remember, I think it was Bertie Ahern being interviewed after the crash, and he constantly kept hammering on that we have 2 million people in employment, which he at the time couldn't get his head around, that we had created so many jobs. And it's only improved since then. So I don't want to harp on about our friends in Northern Ireland, but it's the opposite there. They have an ageing population and less and less young people.
Yeah, and they've had immigration. A lot of people from Northern Ireland have left Northern Ireland, went to the UK, went to London, came to Dublin. Again, you hear a lot of Northern accents around. And, you know, Northern Ireland's just not been that attractive a place to be. So turning that around will take some doing. And, you know, hopefully it can be done, whether there's unification or not. I think it'd be good for the people of Northern Ireland if the economy was turned around and living standards and quality of life improved in a way that made the place attractive.
Sure. To talk just on the political side of it and the unionist community, they become a smaller and smaller number, don't they, in the overall, with these figures the way they're going?
That's right. I mean, again, census data shows that they're becoming a smaller group. And again, they probably lost more population to emigration, particularly to the UK, to GB rather. So they are becoming, you know, and again, you see it electorally, you know, with Sinn Féin being the largest party and unionists. Again, if you went back to the 80s, they always had a majority, and that's gone. It's no longer there. So politically, that creates a completely different reality in Northern Ireland.
Which is only going to continue to go in that direction. It is fascinating. Now, I have to say that my daughter went to see NECAP and Fontaines DC in Belfast and had the time of her life, and was hanging out with other teenagers who were from the unionist community, and they also had the time of their life. So yeah, Loads of good stuff there as well, we better say. A fascinating snapshot of where the population stands at the moment. Edgar, thank you very much indeed for joining us today.
Thank you.
The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.